Is America going the way of the Roman Empire? A growing number of Christians think so, and I'm one of them.
Rod Dreher talking about his presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's why I say that Christians today should take a new look at the way the early Benedictine monks, who emerged out of the ruins of Rome, responded to the collapse of their civilization. We can learn from them how to build stable lives of prayer, Bible study, and worship in strong communities. The Benedict option, as I call it, is not about running away from the world. It's about learning the practices of discipleship that enable us to stand firm for Christ against the world for the sake of the world.
You can meet and hear Rod Dreher making the case for the Benedict option at the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
Everybody knows I have lived a very public life for the last 25 or so years. And so I've had to be in public dealing with some very difficult issues and personal issues, political, public issues. And I read a treatment of the prodigal son parable by the Jesuit Henri Nouwen, who I think is a magnificent writer of spiritual and theological concerns. And I read that parable, and there was a line in it that became just a lifeline for me. And it basically is practice the discipline of gratitude. So regardless of how hard the days are, how difficult the decisions are, be grateful. Be grateful for being a human being, being part of the universe. Be grateful for your limitations. Know that you have to reach out to have more people be with you, to support you, to advise you. Listen to your critics. Answer the questions, but at the end, be grateful. Practice the discipline of gratitude, and that has helped me enormously.
That's Hillary Clinton speaking about the parable of the prodigal son at a 2016 Democratic town hall. She's taken up that parable again in her latest book, What Happened, explaining, well, what happened in 2016 later during the presidential election. How does she take it up? What does she do with it? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton and the prodigal son. Joy Pullman of The Federalist joins us. She's a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled In What Happened, Hillary Clinton Completely Whiffs on the Lessons of the Prodigal Son. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, thank you.
This is a parable that that candidate, senator, secretary of state Hillary Clinton has used before. Talk about how she's picked it up this time in her kind of tell-all post-election book, What Happened?
I first heard about it in the context of her book, the fact that she was talking about this parable and some folks were just discussing that. So I went down to my local Barnes & Noble and picked it up and started reading to find that section. But then when I decided to write on it, I was looking it up and I found that this has been a recurring kind of stump speech for Hillary. Of course, she's a public figure. She does many, many public appearances. And so folks who do that kind of speaking, you know, they have certain things that they'll say time and time again. This appears to be one of them for Hillary. So, for example, when talking about her husband's infidelity, she's talked about the parable of the prodigal son and used that as a reference, as well as this book that she cites in her own book by a Catholic intellectual, Henry Nouwen, about this, that this also goes into detail about the prodigal son. So this is apparently something that Hillary has ruminated on for a number of years, and it's a recurring theme in her life on a variety of contexts, including, you know, her problems with her husband, as well as apparently her problems with Donald Trump and the American voter.
Briefly tell us the parable, kind of the basic meaning. There are different interpretations, of course, but the basic meaning. And then how does Hillary Clinton, how does she apply this to her own situation when she writes her memoir, What Happened?
So Jesus is giving a parable, and in the Bible it goes, I'm trying to, you know, condense it in my mind, but it's actually pretty simple. So what happens is a young man comes to his father and says, Dad, give me the money that I'm supposed to get when you're dead. I want it right now. And so his father does give it to him, and the young man goes into a far country and he spends it on wasteful living. I mean, his brother later says he spent it on prostitutes, so just he's partying it up in a foreign country. And so doing so, he ends up blowing through it all and then is poor and is essentially in the gutter. And then a famine hits that country, and the prodigal son goes to work for someone there, and he finds himself staring at the food of the pigs that he is feeding and wishing he could eat it. And then he realizes the servants in my father's home eat better than this, and here I am wanting pig food. This is crazy. I'm going to go home. I'm going to ask my dad to let me be one of his servants. And then in exchange for that, you know, I'll be able to eat again. So the son decides, the prodigal travels back home. And when his father sees him coming, the Bible says a far way off, the father, you know, just runs to his son, and he is overjoyed to see him. He falls on him. And the son starts his little rehearsed speech. He goes, "Father, I'm not worthy to be your son. Could I be your servant?" And the father basically disregards that completely, and he calls to his servants and says, "Bring out the fatted calf. Let's have a big party. You know, my son was dead, and he is now alive." So they go into the home, and they're partying. You know, the son is dressed in robes and has his father's ring put on his finger. And the older brother, who had been with the father this whole time, comes in from the fields and says, "What's going on in here?" You know, and then he gets mad at the fact that his dissolute brother is getting all these parties. He says to his father, "Look, you know, I've been working for you this whole time. I'm the good son, and you never even let me have a goat to play with. What's going on here? This is really unfair." And so the father looks at him and says, "Son, everything that belongs to me is yours, but I'm overjoyed that your son is back. He was once dead, and he's now alive. Basically, come celebrate with me. Now the prodigal has returned." And so that's what happens. That's the Bible kind of summation of the story there. And so Hillary Clinton, she gives kind of what I think is a conventional, in the beginning, she spends, I think, about 2 pages kind of discussing this. And she gives, I think, initially what is kind of a conventional take on it. But it's kind of thin, but it is a conventional take that work says, well, this teaches us that the importance of love and forgiveness. You know, even though someone might have deeply offended us, have done something deeply wrong, like the father in the parable, you should respond. We should turn the other cheek. You know, we should not punish people for their wrongdoing, so on and so forth. So that's kind of how it starts out. And that actually, and again, it's shallow and it's not as deep as I think, you know, I've been lucky perhaps to have better spiritual teaching than Hillary Clinton has. So I've learned more about it in my lifetime. But again, that doesn't really stray too far. But where it really kind of starts to get weird is where she goes on then to talk about how the parable somehow is also an illustration of her need, to be humble after the election of Donald Trump, and also be grateful for the fact that she now has to be humble, and not kind of in the traditional Christian way, because that sounds really great. We all need to be humble and grateful, of course. But rather, it kind of turns into some Oprah-like platitudes about how that means, therefore, that we should not worry about kind of reaching for the stars, even though we might not reach to get to them. We just need to reach out to each other, trail off, so on and so forth.
This is interesting, and I think people have been kind of fascinated by Hillary Clinton's, I would call them, to be generous, counterintuitive interpretations of things. She was recently quoted something about George Orwell's 1984, talking about how it encourages trust in government. I don't know how someone could have read that book and come to that conclusion. But in any event, it seems a similar thing is going on here with the prodigal son. And it also is one that is, I guess the term might be, idiosyncratic. She kind of sees herself at the center of this story in a way.
Yeah, that is a really good point. Well, the interesting thing is that both in her book, and she's also said this on the stump, Hillary sees herself as the older brother in the parable. And the way that she talks about it kind of implies that, you know, she's the one who does all the right things, and it's still, and, you know, and therefore it is kind of offensive when the people who make the wrong choices, you know, things end up going okay for them, or we forgive their debts, you know, we forgive their sins and so forth. And then, you know, the people who did all the quote unquote the right thing were kind of left holding the bag, paying for other people's sins while not committing any of her own. And I get where she's coming from. I am an oldest sister, and that's kind of my tendency, you know, so I entirely very emotionally understand that feeling. I have felt it often. I probably will for the rest of my life. But the problem with that is that the older brother in this parable is not depicted as exactly the good son. I mean, they're actually both bad sons, but in different ways. You know, we basically have the problem of self-righteous Phariseeism as represented by the older brother. And then we have the problem of, you know, riotous, wanton rebellion as exemplified by the prodigal son. So that is one, I mean, And like you mentioned earlier, there are many good interpretations and ways to think about and think through what Jesus is trying to tell us here. Of course, I think, or I've been taught to think by my pastors and you know, the folks who know the Bible and theology better than I do, that of course this whole point is that we are all the prodigal, right? We, no matter how good we think we are truly all sinners and we all need God's forgiveness. So those I think are much richer ways to think about the parable of the prodigal. That is a way of actually being humble, not saying I'm the older brother, but I guess I'll begrudgingly have to accept that those younger brothers can't ever get things right and I'm just going to have to keep paying for it. That's a lot different than saying, I may feel like the older brother, but really I'm the prodigal. You know, my self-righteousness makes me a prodigal, and that is something that I need to repent for as well.
What's the basic message erstwhile candidate Clinton appears to be trying to send to her reader when she quotes this parable of the prodigal son with reference to herself? What is she saying?
It's really actually kind of hard to tell because while reading through her thoughts on it, it's very jumbled. You know, she jumps from one thing to the other, from talking about stories about her dad forgiving her, even though she disappoints him, to the idea of gratefulness, to trying to cite this Catholic theologian. It's just really, it's like she doesn't have a very clear line on it, but she wants people to come away with a good feeling, and she's citing something that's supposed to have us feeling like a sense of internal peace. But the problem with me reading that is it's really hard for me to have a sense of, it's kind of like eating a meal, you know, if you eat a cream puff, it tastes good, but you're not full at the end of it. There's not really any substance there, and that's really kind of the way that I feel reading Hillary's ruminations on the subject of the prodigal son. It just feels like she really missed what Christ was trying to get across there. And as I say in the article you talk about, I think that's really, really a problem because, look, Hillary wanted to lead the free world. So a good leader needs to be able to understand and speak to the spiritual condition of her people because that really translates into the political needs that they're going to have. So her inability to really, I mean, and this is something, one of the major criticisms of Hillary is that she just doesn't really get people. She doesn't connect very well. And I think that's because of things like this. She thinks about them in terms of platitudes. And that really, again, you might feel good hearing it. And, you know, there's a little bit of something there. There's a bit of a cream puff, but in the end, you know, you're left empty. And it's just really not something that you come away with feeling like, you know, someone really ministered to nourish to your soul, to your needs at that time. That's really what a leader ought to provide the people that she's seeking to lead.
I am not aware, and I could be wrong, but I'm not aware of another presidential candidate, especially in such an, I think we could call this unexpected defeat, because nobody, mm-hmm. no matter maybe one or two people, could credibly claim to have expected Donald Trump to have defeated Hillary Clinton in this last election, but I'm unaware of any other candidate attempting to explain to us, and maybe it says something about her as a candidate that she feels the need to explain to us as though the American people can't figure it out on their own what happened. What are your thoughts there?
I remember that actually very viscerally because I just thought it was going to, I mean, it was kind of a depressing night either way. I mean, neither candidate is, you know, really, I mean, like most Americans, I wasn't really happy about either candidate, but I was expecting it to be the worst nightmare, another 8 years of a Barack Obama type. It was just really wild to have that upset. So I remember that, like you're mentioning. But again, I think this actually says something about the person Hillary herself. I mean, because it seems to kind of confirm the suspicion of her as someone who do what, and I don't like to say uncharitable things about people, but it seems, I think this is well supported by her record, that Hillary Clinton seems to be the type of person who will do whatever it takes to gain power. And so if you're that kind of person, you don't really, I mean, you are spiritually vacant, right? That is a major spiritual problem. That is a major flaw with your character. And so obviously a person like that is not going to have any kind of guidance or substantive leadership at a deeper level to offer people. And it kind of confirms, you know, the impression of her as someone who spits out poll-tested bromides, you know, and again, an attempt to catch people with that kind of cream puff, but without they may get caught by it sometimes, but after a couple of meals of that, feeling empty and dissatisfied, you know, they realize what's going on here.
Have you discerned what her answer to the question posed in by the title of her book actually ends up being, or is that something hidden deeper in the kind of in the book itself that you haven't explored?
Well, I think, I mean, it appears to me that basically the book is a collection of blaming other people. I mean, what happened basically was, you know, everything went wrong and I didn't get what I deserved. And again, like, it's hard. I feel bad saying that, you know, because it's such a mean thing to say about a person. But again, this is Hillary Clinton we're talking about. Again, her public track record has pretty well demonstrated, again, that she's willing to lie. She's willing to undergo shenanigans. She's willing to cover up really terrible things that both herself and her associates have done, all for the purpose of being in power. But she really doesn't have a reason other than power for being in power. And that's really the thing that a leader has to have, right? You know, if you are just in power to serve yourself, again, people notice that. And, you know, they don't really want that, right? I mean, in America, still, we the people get to have a say somewhat in the people and policies that are supposed to be governing our lives. It's supposed to be a system of self-government, a representative government. And so when, you know, we see someone who obviously is putting herself ahead of the people she seeks to serve, that doesn't fit with what we demand, you know, from our style of government.
Joy Pullman is a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, In What Happened, Hillary Clinton Completely Whiffs on the Lessons of the Prodigal Son. You can purchase her book and read her column at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you.
Thank you.
Folks, the Lutheran Witness magazine interprets the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective. Take advantage of their great offer, 6 digital or print issues for only $6.99. The theme of the next month's issue is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. You can find out more at cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness, cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to talk with Dr. Jeff Gibbs about Matthew. He is disciple. He is apostle and he's evangelist. That means he's one of those first 12 that Jesus called and then appointed apostles in his church. And he wrote one of the four gospels. We'll talk about all those aspects of Matthew tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Daily worship, historical hymnody, and catechesis interwoven with direct instruction in phonics, traditional math, literature, grammar, history, Latin, and strings. It's part of our daily life at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're located 1 mile off Interstate 55. For more information, visit school.stpaulhamel.org. We would love to share our joy in learning with your child. school.stpaulhamel.org.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.